From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On January 20th, 2021, a majority of Americans heaved a sigh of relief, watching Donald Trump leave Washington, D.C. for his new Florida residence and welcoming a new administration that promised truth, decorum, and decency. The all-star lineup of musicians sang tear-jerking, syrupy anthems, and many among us cried with joy. And with good reason, considering the nightmarish horror of the past 4 years. But my next guest issues a warning with a quote from I.F. Stone that incoming presidents, quote, make us the dupes of our hopes. Norman Solomon is co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org. His books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and Made Love Got War, Close Encounters with America's Warfare State. His latest article is entitled, Don't Let President Biden Make Us the Dupes of Our Hopes. Welcome back to the program, Norman.
Thanks, Sonali.
You and I have spoken many times during the Trump administration and even before that. And just before we get to what you think is going to be happening under the Biden administration, isn't it important for us to take a minute to say, thank goodness the Trump era is actually over in as much as he has left the presidency?
Yeah, really, that the real life nightmare of the last 4 years is behind us. Even though we know that Trumpism, so to speak, is going to continue, even if that guy happens to be out of the White House or even out of public life down the road, it really, I think, is important to remember that if it weren't for grassroots organizers, progressives acting and doing their work outside of the official parameters of the Democratic Party or the Biden-Harris campaign, that no doubt Trump would have another 4 years. So in that sense, I think getting rid of President Trump is a real victory for progressives.
So what do you mean when you quote I.F. Stone, don't let us become the dupes of our hopes?
Every time we've had a Republican president replaced by a Democratic one, the inaugural has been decade after decade, a time when many liberals and progressives and others, however they describe themselves in those realms, do heave a sigh of relief and then sort of step back and assume that celebration should lead to a degree of passivity. And that's exactly wrong. We've seen historically time and again when a Democrat enters the White House and people who supported that Democrat against a Republican do step back, do give space, do give a break to and benefit of the doubt to that president, then the forces of Wall Street, corporate America, military-industrial complex, their 24/7 lobbying and grip on that administration just gains more power. So we're going to be empowering corporate America and the forces that it galvanizes to the extent that we give Biden a break. To the extent that we say, oh, well, you know, he's just getting started, give him a chance. And so really, I'd like to cite two parallels in the last several decades. Bill Clinton came in, people were glad to get rid of the first President Bush, and Bill Clinton proceeded to push through NAFTA. He populated his cabinets with Wall Street and other functionaries for corporate America and the military-industrial complex. And after NAFTA, immediately within 2 years, in 1994, the Republicans took over Congress. The same thing essentially happened with the Obama administration, where Obama came in 2009. Homeowners had their houses underwater. He didn't really bail out a whole lot of people compared to bailing out the big banks on Wall Street. Obama, too, filled his cabinet with Wall Street and corporate types and fixers from the upper reaches of the wealthy classes who had supported the Democratic nominee in 2008. And again, 2 years later, we had Republicans take over Congress in 2010. So the third time would not be a charmer. It would be a repetition of what has had tremendously negative impacts to empower the right wing over the legislative branch. And so just to sort of sum up, Sonali, I would say that when people often very sincerely say, we've got to fight the right wing, give President Biden a break, they're missing the historic reality that the best way to fight the right wing is to strengthen progressive populism that doesn't give phony ammunition in a political sense for right-wing Republicans to pose as populists, attack the elitism of the Democratic administration, and then surge back into power in Congress and then the White House.
So this reflects what Senator Bernie Sanders has been saying quite frequently. And in fact, on Wednesday, on Inauguration Day, he published an op-ed in CNN.com where he outlined what he thinks the agenda of the incoming Biden-Harris administration should be. And he warns failure to adequately respond to the economic desperation in America today will undermine the Biden administration and likely lead Democrats to lose their thin majorities in the U.S. House of Representatives and U.S. Senate in 2022. So yes, of course, Democrats now control the presidency, the Senate, and the House, but the Senate and the House are controlled by the thinnest of margins, especially, of course, the Senate. But Bernie Sanders, for the first time, is the Senate Budget Committee chair. So what can he do to ensure that Democrats don't, you know, not just lose their own political power, but screw over the country?
In combination with progressive movements and constituencies, Bernie Sanders can do a hell of a lot as Senate Budget Committee chair. All sorts of measures, for instance, to cancel student debt, to implement de facto health care for all as fully and quickly as possible in the midst of this horrific crisis of the pandemic, to fight for $2,000, not just once, but $2,000 monthly to people in this country to get off the floor and really initiate the kind of reminiscent of the New Deal, a Green New Deal, hopefully, that says that we're going to stop surrendering to the class war being waged from the top down viciously by Republicans, but also so often perhaps less viciously, but also still in a deadly way, by Democrats. So Bernie can do a hell of a lot. And I think the fact that he is chair of the Senate Budget Committee, an extremely powerful position, is a testament not even so much to Bernie, although he's been very inspiring and historically crucial for progressive movements, but it's most of all a testimony to people around the country whose names we don't know, who have organized on all sorts of issues to insist that we're not going to leave the electoral field to corporate Democrats or Republicans, that there's another realm that has to be planted and the grassroots have to harvest. And that's always hard work. I have to say that at this juncture with the Biden inauguration behind us, progressives must not be an amen corner of the Democratic Party. And of course, we're seeing some of that already. Whatever Biden wants to do, we're behind him. Okay, the reality should be whatever good Biden wants to do, we're behind him. What we don't support as principled progressives, we're going to fight against. And you know, one example would be the militarism, which is clearly still part of the Biden agenda.
The first few actions that Biden has taken do seem promising. One is the nearly $2 trillion economic stimulus package that he has offered, although some have said that the $1,400 checks don't go far enough. Then there's a slew of immigration-related executive orders on his first day, overturning the Muslim ban, extending DACA, and a proposed immigration bill that offers a path to citizenship. Strong action on the coronavirus. How do you respond to that? And do you think that as the, I mean, even though it sounds great, of course, these are all proposals. So the executive actions are executive actions, and it's easy for him to undo what Trump did via executive action. And the bare minimum that we should expect from Biden should be to undo via executive action the damage Trump did. But when it comes to the legislative arena, the economic stimulus package, say, the comprehensive immigration reform, say, your first offer on the table should be as radical as you would like to go, rather than the sort of realistic middle ground that you think might come out of it. And Democrats have often been guilty of putting forward the moderate plan that they think has a chance of passing, whereas Republicans do the opposite and put forward the most radical plan that they want to see and end up with something close to that. So where do Biden's proposals on the economy and immigration fall, in your opinion?
Well, the proposals are often a good start. Of course, there's nothing moderate about the problems that we in this country and the world are facing: the climate emergency, the pandemic, the economic catastrophe that is even worse for low-income people, people of color, in terms of the overall population. And the praise that Biden, in his first hours, really, after becoming president, that came from, for instance, if you were watching CNN after his inaugural speech, a lot of hype about reaching across the aisle, about working for consensus with Republicans and Democrats in Congress, or at least building coalitions with some Republicans. That's very dangerous, because when you come in and you have a decent proposal, and then you put it in the sausage factory and make clear you want to splice and dice it, and you'll be happy with part of a loaf, then the loaf gets smaller and smaller. Sometimes it's crumbs, sometimes it's half a loaf, when even the full loaf was inadequate. So this is a, you know, a generic problem where some of the Democratic Party, certainly most of the mass media, will be piling on in the next days and weeks and months and saying, okay, the legislative process needs to work. We hear a lot about how Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden go way back and they can potentially work together. We shouldn't be working or urging the leadership of the new administration to work closely with Mitch McConnell. But we should be doing what the Republicans, for their, might I say, evil ends, have done for many years, which is to use all the levers of power to push what our agenda is.
The filibuster in the Senate is a big issue, and we're already hearing reports that soon-to-be Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is negotiating with soon-to-be Minority Leader Mitch McConnell about preserving the filibuster in the Senate, which would essentially give Republicans veto power over a Biden agenda. How important is that aspect of the legislative path?
Well, it is important, and the organization Our Revolution, Progressive Democrats of America, they have been organizing nationally to get rid of the filibuster. I think Senator Merkley from Oregon, one of the more progressive Democrats in the Senate, likewise. And of course, it's been an impediment when you, especially in this situation where you have a president who, for the first time in 4 years now, is not a right-wing lunatic. You want to have a president to be able to introduce or propose legislation that then can be pushed through, and you don't want the right-wing Republicans in the Senate to be able to use a filibuster to block the nominees or the legislation. I think it goes to a broader question of how progressives will relate to the Democratic leadership in Congress. And frankly, although we have at the top of the Progressive Caucus in the House, which has almost 100 members, Nancy Pelosi has generally played a very pro-Wall Street, pro-corporate America role. She has straitjacketed the possibility to do massive public investment with her so-called PAYGO proposal, which progressives were just able to blow some holes in. And Chuck Schumer has been moved from being an obstacle to sometimes giving a nod to progressive legislation. But it's all about what happens at the grassroots. And frankly, I think often the right wing has been more cognizant of this reality than progressives, that all of those people on Capitol Hill come from a congressional district or a state. And if we're not willing to raise hell with our representative in Congress, our senators, then they're only going to be hearing from the more corporate and reactionary sides. So I think all this is up for grabs, and that includes how the Senate ultimately will function.
Should progressives look at the next 2 years, if not 4 years, as not battling necessarily Biden-Harris, but battling the forces that are trying relentlessly to push Biden and Harris to the right?
We definitely should not personalize this battle. And at rootsaction.org, when we were unsuccessful, along with many others, in getting Bernie Sanders nominated in 2020, we joined forces in a united front for the Vote Trump Out campaign. And there was always a promise to that Vote Trump Out campaign that after defeating Trump, we were going to challenge Biden. And that's what we're doing through rootsaction.org with our No Honeymoon campaign. And the ultimate reality is that it's not about an individual. Noam Chomsky did a Vote Trump Out video for us, and he said, it doesn't matter how you feel. Nobody really should care about what you think or feel about Joe Biden. There are millions of lives at stake. There's a planet at stake. And what we need to be willing and able to do is present a political analysis and act on it that says there is a class war going on, that that's not just rhetoric, it is reality. It's experienced by low-income people every day, moderate-income people, those who are suffering because there's an economic situation where three people, Buffett, Gates, Bezos, have more wealth than the entire bottom half of the U.S. population. There's a word for this. It's called oligarchy, and it's incompatible with democracy. So the forces that are supporting the Biden-Harris administration, let's face it, are part of corporate America, and we have to be willing and able to analyze the power that they bring to the government and to fight against it.
And of course, the displays of patriotism and the music and the flag waving at the inauguration unfortunately served to personalize the relationship between those in power and their constituents. It's very much what the relationship between Trump and his base became. But unfortunately, even for liberals and Democrats, we have this tendency to want to put leaders on pedestals, form these personal relationships, want to believe in the character of these folks, the decency, etc., instead of looking at them as politicians who will do the will of the people only when pushed as hard as possible to do so. And you think of, for example, Biden's embrace of the idea of workers having to earn, being able to earn a minimum of $15 an hour, the federal minimum wage, just a few years ago was considered far too radical, not just by Republicans, but by Democrats. And so that embrace should be seen not as some personal victory from Biden, right, but as a victory of the grassroots movement that demanded for years that people should earn a decent wage. And it just is worth us reminding ourselves of that over and over.
Oh, that's crucial. And for almost five full decades, Joe Biden has had an arc where only recently, frankly, in many ways in the last year or two, has he begun to even sound progressive around economic issues beyond the most superficial of rhetoric. On the $15 an hour federal minimum wage, that he has now embraced, he had to be dragged kicking and screaming to accept that. It's because of the organizing work, electoral and outside the electoral arena, that was done inside and outside the Bernie Sanders campaign that normalized something that seemed or was portrayed as fringe to now at the center of an agenda. And that goes across the board for many aspects of Biden's record. He didn't just become transformed. He didn't have a brain or heart transplant politically in the last year or two, after a four-decade record that embraced corporate power, that was he was a tool of the credit card company in the financial sector of the country. He was a key senator to push the invasion of Iraq. You could go on and on. His record was repugnant to any progressive who actually examined it. He also is a politician who, unlike, I think, even Hillary Clinton, is not primarily ideological. I don't think he ever really hated the left. He just didn't see any use for it in his political climb. And because progressives have changed so much, the atmosphere and the dialogue in this country, he's been pulled along. And our challenge ahead is not to defer to his worst aspects or his instincts, but to drag him along and the administration and the government along in a much better direction.
Norman, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure to have you on. We'll link to your article about approaching the Biden administration from our website. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sonali.
My guest is Norman Solomon, co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org, prolific author, and his latest article that we've been discussing is entitled, Don't Let President Biden Make Us the Dupes of Our Hopes. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.